Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Welcome back to Radioactive Ramblings, where we are back to talk about what matters most in this world. My name is Aaron, and today I am joined by the one, the only, Richard.
I'm your other host for today, Richard. Thanks for that introduction, Aaron. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing today?
Doing fantastic. We get to talk about Fallout Season 2, Episode 1, The Innovator.
That is correct, and I've seen a lot of people online calling this episode by the wrong name because of a little funky thing that they did, which was not super clear, but we'll get into that in a minute. But as Richard said, Season 2, Episode 1, we are so back, and if you didn't catch our preview episode and you want a little bit of a trailer breakdown, get some of the references from that, go back, take a little listen. It wasn't too long of an episode, just an hour long.
Yeah, and as per usual, right before recording, he's like, this will be a short one. This will be a short one for sure. It's never a short one.
I think I say that every single time.
I think you said that on our Red Rising wrap-up, and that one was like almost 2 hours.
You know, sometimes it just gets away from us, doesn't it?
It really does. We do tend to ramble a bit.
Radioactively. And speaking of radioactive ramblings, we have a lot of ways that you can get a hold of us if you want to radioactive ramble with us. So, Richard, how are people going to get a hold of us?
Well, there's just so many ways. First off, we got our email, radioactive@thelorehounds.com. We have a channel set up for radioactive of ramblings within the Lorehounds Discord server. You can send us a message, chat about the show, tell us that Chase needs to be on more episodes because we miss that guy.
We really do. Chase, come home. We miss you. The kids miss you.
The kids. But we also have a contact form, or you could leave us a voicemail at thelorehounds.com, and consider giving us a follow on Blue Sky at radioactive141. And we would also appreciate, pretty please, a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. There's a YouTube option. You know, whatever you guys listen to our podcast on, you know, it helps other listeners like yourselves find us and expand the community and all that. So we would appreciate that.
Yeah. I forgot to include this in our little blurb for today, but we did get a Fallout thread up in the Lorehounds Discord server. So there is episode discussion in there. So there's a general chat where you can just post your quick thoughts about the show, what you thought about last season, stuff like that. That one is spoiler free. And then there are the episode by episode full spoiler chats where you can say whatever you want, whenever you want, as long as it is appropriate for the community, of course. But anything that you would like to say about the Fallout show, as long as you're up to that episode, is great. So we would love to have you as part of the discussion because it's getting lively in there. There are people chatting. I just made some emojis for.
I see that. I haven't been active in it, but like I'm pulling this up as you're talking about it.
Good friend of the community, Sub-Zero, requested a little emoji of the Vault Boy, excuse me, and I added a few in there. So I might add a couple more emojis as the season goes on. And
I like these.
I especially am a fan of the Nerd Rage one. I thought that was kind of
a
fun one to do, which if you're just a watcher of the show, Nerd Rage is a perk that you get in Fallout where it's exactly what it sounds like. You can have a moment of Nerd Rage where you get really strong and you get a little bit better at killing things. So there you go.
I get that whenever like I'm at work and I'm reading, you know, whatever book and one of my favorite characters die, I just go into a full on nerd rage.
Yep.
Lets me weld the metal better.
When that steam is coming out of your ears, you can just use that to weld the metal together.
Oh, for sure.
Well, without further ado, should we get into the story arc? We have a lot to cover today. I went a little bit crazy with our outline here.
I'm excited though. I'm cool to start with the cold open. Yeah, let's get into it.
All right. Robert Edwin House, CEO of Robco, sits in a bar with some working class fellows who have a bone to pick with him. House quickly proves their assumptions about him correct as he tests a mind control device on a few of the men, ordering one to kill the others before the device pops the man's head like a balloon.
As a blue collar worker, we are not all like that, I swear.
I would say that they were kind of in the right here.
Oh, for sure on this one. But like, I mean more on like the wanting to beat up people in a bar. We are not all like that. There's a lot, though.
You know, every group has their bad apples who want to get into back alley fights.
Yeah, they really do.
We should talk about something kind of important and something a little bit confusing.
Yes, I was confused about this as well, actually.
So on the TV, we can see that Robert House from last season is on the TV. But Robert House from this season is sitting in the bar. So these are two separate people within the season. They didn't just recast House. There is a second House. And that leads to the question, and I'll give a couple of options for us after we hear your thoughts, Richard. There's a couple of options of what's happening. What do you think is happening here? Why are there two Robert Houses?
I think it's very likely that he's got one that's just like, you know, his spokesperson. Like, right? Like, maybe I'm assuming the TV face is more just spokesperson, like head of the company, like public figurehead style. Mm-hmm. But then the guy in the bar was actually Robert House, right? Like, that's what I'm thinking.
That's also what I think is happening, but I do want to put forth a different theory that I've seen out there, which could very well be true, but I really doubt.
Just curious, because I just kind of used my brain for a second and actually thought about it for a sec. Could the theory be that maybe they were able to get one of the mind control devices to like really work, and maybe that's who the guy in the bar was, or the fucking TV guy, like one of them is a mind control puppet.
I didn't even think about that, but that is really possible. It would kind of make sense. I would shy away from that one just a little bit because it seems like he's testing it out like really early stages at this point. So
yeah,
but he might have a more advanced version. That wouldn't surprise me. He's definitely a genius type character. The other thing that I've kind of seen floating around, which I'll tell you why I don't think this is the case, Robert House has a brother, and they haven't named this other house like the one that we see in the bar. So a lot of people are saying, oh, maybe that is Robert House's brother, and there's some kind of thing going on there. The problem with that, House and his brother hate each other. There's a lot of bad blood there, and Robert House's brother is kind of a nobody at this point in the show, or at this point in the series.
Okay.
The whole backstory of the bad blood is that the House family, their father, made the family fortune off of H&H Tool Company, which you hear House talk about a lot during the episode, yes, right?
The nail gun. And such.
Exactly. Which, by the way, the nail gun is a weapon from Fallout New Vegas that you can use. You can get the H&H Tools nail gun.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. When House's father died, the brother cut him out of the business and removed him from the will and took H&H Tools for himself, which that's the reason why House founded his company, Robco, to begin with, is because he was cut out of the family business. And what ends up happening is House gets so rich off the tech sector that he is able to undercut his brother and buy out H&H Tools and leave his brother destitute with absolutely nothing in the end.
Oh, you know, as you do to your family members.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that House was a little bit justified because of the whole, you know, being cut out of the family business and denied the fortune situation.
Right.
But yeah, there's definitely some bad blood there. So I would say it's probably not his brother, even though people are saying that. I would lean more towards the idea that he has a body double. House, yeah. The whole ordeal with his brother kind of left him as a really paranoid person. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I will say me thinking that the body double could be a mind control person, I think I'm really thinking back to Gen V with this one, you know?
Yes, that if you haven't seen Gen V, you should watch it. I thought it was pretty good.
And I also thought it was pretty good.
We might go back and do a wrap up at some point, but we had some issues with the scheduling there, but we might get back to it at some point before season 5 of The Boys comes out.
Yeah.
We get our first needle drop of the episode right at the beginning. We get Cheek to Cheek by Peggy Lee playing as protesters beat down on a Mr. Handy robot.
You know, we've all been there. We've all been there. You know, automation? Boo. Mr. Handy? Boo. Although, they are voiced by Matt Berry, so like, maybe we don't have to kill all the Mr. Handys.
Yeah, I would say so. And it's also kind of funny that they're beating down on a Mr. Handy robot, because that's not even a Robco robot. That's a General Atomics robot. So they're just after whatever robot. which I'm sure that was the show kind of making a comment about them not really caring too much about who it is. Just automation in general, bad. Give real people jobs, you know.
Very true.
And this is where we get the thing that I saw a lot of confusion about. A lot of people thought that the title of this episode is The Man Who Knew, because the title screen at the end of the opening comes up as The Man Who Knew. That's just the title for Mr. House. Like we got in season 1, episode 1 title screens for Lucy, Maximus, and the Ghoul. So I guess they are casting Robert as The Man Who Knew. What does he know?
What does he know? That's a good question. I think he might know about the nukes, man. He might know who dropped them, is all I'm saying.
He might even have been the one to push the button, according to a little conversation we get later in the episode.
No, Robert House? He would never. Nice guy.
Real nice guy. It's interesting that they are changing things a little bit here. Or not even changing things, but they're adding some depth to his character in Fallout New Vegas. And I'm really sorry, listeners. I'm going to say that a lot. That's kind of going to be part of the point of this podcast, is to point out some of the references and some of the lore from the games while we talk about the show. I will try my best not to harp on it too much, but it'll be hard for me. Mm-hmm. Anyways. In Fallout New Vegas, Mr. House does not admit that he is the one who dropped the bombs. He just talks a little bit to the player character about how he knew that the bombs were coming, and that's why he built an anti-missile system around Vegas to protect the city from the bombs. And so a little bit of a new addition to the lore, which I think is interesting. And we'll get into the whole secretive house thing later, because it'll come up again.
Yeah. Before we go further, I just wanted to say, I kind of hope that they don't confirm who dropped the bombs. And I have a reasoning for this. I saw this on Instagram the other day, and like, not I never thought about it that way, but I guess I never thought about it that in depth, is like, I think the idea of it being like ambiguous as to who, like what specific country fired first or whatever, I feel like that fits really well with Fallout itself, because it's about how like war never changes and everything. What am I trying to say here? I'm not very verbose with this.
I think I get it doesn't really matter who dropped the bombs, because the whole world is destroyed anyways, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. I think at the end of the day, if the whole world is just blown up, everyone is screwed. It really doesn't matter. The people in power who were able to protect themselves were able to protect themselves. And
yeah,
that's just the way it goes. The little people on the ground suffer while the people at the top get to do what they want.
Of course.
We get a name for the bald guy who gets stuck with the device. His name is Bill. I don't think Bill's coming back, but he was in the credits as Bill, and his friends were Bill's friends.
Okay. Bill's buds, even?
Bill's buds. Bud's buds.
Bud's buds.
I think it's so funny that they still have Bud listed, like, in the Amazon X-ray situation as Brain on a Roomba.
Yeah. Brain on a Roomba.
That's just hilarious.
Dude, they gotta advertise Roombas. Yeah. Amazon, remember, Amazon, very small local startup. They need their ad revenue.
Just a little bookstore who happens to put out Fallout on Prime.
Yeah.
Do you have any closing thoughts about the opening before we move on to Lucy and the Ghoul?
I do not, but I am excited to talk about Lucy and the Ghoul. I think their dynamic has, you know, like in season one, I think their dynamic is great and is probably one of my favorite parts so far of the new season.
Absolutely. You want to get us set up with Lucy and the Ghoul?
Oh, of course. They have been pursuing Hank, you know, for, we don't know how long, but we'll assume, I don't know, a month, maybe.
At least a day.
At least a day, yeah. Maybe a week. we'll call it a week until we get, like, some kind of confirmation. So they've been traveling across the Mojave, and they have bumped into some iconic Fallout New Vegas locations that Aaron is definitely going to tell us about. And their dynamic really hasn't changed much, as the Ghoul's ruthless plans are still being halted by Lucy's, like, upbringing of the vaults about, like, how the world needs to be better and people need to treat each other the way they want to be treated, which is a great idea to try that. But unfortunately, if you're going up against psycho raiders, I think you just gotta do what you gotta do, you know?
Yep. And the first location that they bump up against is Novak, which we talked a little bit about in our preview episode. This is the place with Dinky the Dino, who is the mascot of the town. This is based off of a real-life road stop attraction in Nevada, so if you ever see Dinky the Dino in real life, I don't think that's what its name is in real life, but very cool little reference there. They negotiate with a group of raiders called the Great Khans. This is the third iteration of the Khans. They have been the Khans. They've had a tough go of it, and a little fun fact about them, you see one of them named Nick the Prick. He does some jet, which is a Fallout drug, and the Khans are actually responsible for manufacturing most of the drugs that are in the Mojave Wasteland. They're pretty big-time drug runners and dealers out here in the Wasteland.
Right. As you kind of have to be. I mean, whatever it takes to make it through life in the Wasteland.
Oh, exactly. Whatever puts food on the table in the Wasteland, I guess.
Good food, like flea soup. Yummy in my tummy.
That made my stomach churn.
Oh, yeah, I know. It looked just absolutely horrifying.
It seems like the Ghoul has a little bit of a history with the Khans, according to Nick the Prick, who says that the Ghoul has been terrorizing the Khans since the times of their granddaddies. Could you imagine what some of that terrorization is?
That guy, he definitely has just laid waste to their ranks in the past. I mean, that's just what the Ghoul seems to be good at this point, is just kind of unloading on people. I don't know.
He does love to kick some ass. And while he's kicking ass in this episode, Richard.
Big Iron.
What song did we get?
Big yep. Iron. So peak. I love that song. You love that song. We all love that song. Big Iron.
I've seen people freaking out on the internet about this one, because this is without a doubt the most iconic song that was in Fallout New Vegas.
I would argue it's the most, maybe the most iconic Fallout song besides I don't want to set the world on fire by the ink spots. I think those are the top two Fallout. Like, I hear them, I think of Fallout. And when I think of Fallout, I think of those songs, you know, like inextricably linked.
If I wasn't so afraid of getting copyright claimed or whatever on Apple Podcasts, I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire would have been the opening for our podcast.
Or we could have done that for season one and then Big Iron for season two. But yeah, I get what you mean.
I don't think that a podcast of our scope would ever have a problem with that, if I'm being honest, but that's just not something I want to take the chance on.
Yeah.
In the large kind of opening shot where we see Novak for the first time, in the background, you can see the Helios 1 solar array, which, if you listen to our preview episode, is the control center for the Archimedes 2 space laser, which is exactly what it sounds like. It is a giant space laser that acts as a weapon of mass destruction.
Only acts like it?
Well, it kind of is a weapon of mass destruction. And do you know what the control mechanism for Archimedes 2 is?
Oh god, what?
It is a toy space gun.
Oh, you know, that's... There's aura. You know, I see it.
There is. When you find the control mechanism for it, because you can turn on the space laser pretty early in the game when you get to Helios 1, but you mm-hmm. don't have an ability to really control it. Later on in the game, you then find some 10-year-old running around Freeside, the outer area of Vegas, and he's just playing with a little toy alien gun, and you can either buy it off him for a whole lot of money, or you can convince him that it's worthless and take his toy.
I'm kind of shocked there isn't a third option to just steal it.
Yeah, there's no stealing option, and there is no pry it from my cold dead hands option, because...
Well, yeah, that's a kid. I get that part.
Yeah.
But I feel like you should be able to pickpocket a kid, you know? That's not inherently evil. I don't actually think like this, by the way. This is just the Fallout logic getting to me, guys. The Wasteland, the rules of the Wasteland are just burned into me.
Now I'm really afraid that you are going to go and take some kid's lunch money after this podcast is over.
I would never do that, dude. That's messed up. I'm going to take some adult's lunch money, obviously.
All right, that's more acceptable. I can take that.
Yeah. God.
When the ghoul is kind of being strung up, he talks about being in the town about 30 years back and buying a soda pop from a woman named Darla. Darla is not a character we get to meet in New Vegas, but she is a character we hear a lot about, because one of the companions who you meet in Novak, he is one of the snipers that guards the town by being posted up in Dinky the Dino's mouth. His wife was Darla, and prior to the events of Fallout New Vegas, like just before the events of the game start, the Legion takes Darla's wife, and she essentially becomes a slave for the Legion, and Craig Boone, who is a retired NCR sniper, he's not able to save her, and so as a way to save his wife from slavery, he ends up shooting and killing his wife, and that was Darla. So, little reference there.
So sad.
It is really sad. Craig Boone, he's a real tragic character. He was also... he's got some pretty bad PTSD because he was one of the snipers who was at the Bitter Springs Massacre, where a lot of the women and the children that were belonging to the Great Khan's tribe were killed by the NCR in a miscommunication where the NCR commanders told them to just fire on the civilians.
Oh, yeah, and they were just following orders, which is just always great.
Yeah, so Boone, he's had a rough go of it, and that leads me to flea soup.
Yummy in my tummy.
If your son owed you money, would you be pretty pissed?
Probably not. Like, that's my kid. I don't know. I don't think so. No.
Well, flea soup lady, she was sure upset that her son was killed by Hank before he got the opportunity to pay her back. That might have been my favorite line in the series so far. When they go up to her, And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. And she's like, yeah, the cocksucker owed me fucking money, you know?
Dude, I think that, like what you put in the outline, like that scene does have everything to love about Fall. It's got the weirdness of like she's going to go make the flea soup. And then to make it, she just pulls her hood down and starts scratching her fucking head until the fleas fall into the soup. Like that's so weird and quirky, but that fits perfectly with Fallout's like identity, and so does just flea soup in general, you know?
It does. I mean, people out here are eating giant cockroaches. The flea soup should not be surprising to anyone. I'm just surprised that the fleas aren't the size of a small dog.
Yeah, because weren't there like big fleas in 76? Again, I know that that's like up for debate if that's canon or not, but
There might have been some big fleas in 76, but I did really think that the whole flea soup thing was awesome. It was disgusting in the best kind of way to see those things jumping in and out of the soup. The whole time that Lucy had that thing, the little bowl of flea soup close to her face, I was like, take that away. You are going to get fleas on your scalp. You are never going to get
I think
get
that's
going to
come back. Like, I think that could actually be a thing at the end, by the end of the season, is that she's just got flea infestation.
Maybe Ella Purnell will have to shave her hair.
Bald Ella Purnell.
Well, Lucy and the ghoul are trying to bring Hank to justice, or at the very least, Lucy is trying to bring Hank to justice. The ghoul just wants his family back. He wants to know where they are.
He wants to know where his family is, and then he wants to get his get back. I know as soon as he finds out, he's going to try and blow Hank's head to pieces.
I have a couple of questions for you I want to hear your thoughts on.
Oh boy, I'm ready.
Number one, do you think that there is a big possibility that the ghoul's family is alive? And number two, will the ghoul be on the same side as his family? Because in the flashbacks, he's against Barb. He's kind of spying on her. So I don't know, even if they reunite, is he reuniting because he wants to get his daughter back and his wife back? Or does he want to get his daughter back and slime his wife?
I think he's going to, in a very emotional... Ooh! So actually, hold on. I'm cooking, okay? So Norm is unfreezing all of Bud's buds.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got to... I'm pretty sure that his wife was in Bud's buds, or at least like she's got to be linked to that somehow. Like, she's definitely still alive, maybe through the cryo thing. You know, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, yes, he's going to want to reunite with his wife and daughter, but I think he's going to want to maybe even kill his wife. I don't know if it would be that far, but like he's definitely not going to mess with her anymore. And then he's going to want his daughter back, and she's going to be somewhat brainwashed into loving Vault-Tec.
Those are some great theories. The only thing I would disagree with is I don't think that Barb would be in the Bud's fault. I think she's way too high up on the food chain for that in Vault-Tec. It seems like Bud's is a lot of kind of bumbling middle managers, to put it kindly. And Barb seems
Why are we putting it kindly? Fuck these people.
That's so true. Vault-Tec sucks. They don't deserve any sympathy from us as the viewer.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I think that Barb is probably in some kind of control vault, or maybe she's even somewhere in some dark corner of the place that Hank gets to later in the episode. It seems like that's a pretty large Vault-Tec HQ area, but it also seemed like he was the only one there. So I don't know if what's going on.
Yeah, we'll figure that out as the show goes on.
The final plot point that we have for Lucy and the Ghoul is them going to Vault 24, which, fun fact, that is cut content from Fallout New Vegas. It was originally supposed to be in the game, but if you don't know the development story of New Vegas, Bethesda finished Fallout 3, and they wanted something in between that game and Skyrim, and so they told... They told Obsidian. Yes, thank you. So they tell Obsidian, you have 18 months to make a full game. Which, if you know anything about game development, crazy tight timeline. I mean, Bethesda has been working on The Elder Scrolls 6 for, oh god, 13 years.
We don't gotta think about that. However, it's just gonna make me mad when they release another version of Skyrim.
Dude, they already did. They released another version of Skyrim like 2 weeks ago for the Switch too.
Yep. I can't wait for them to make one for like, what's left? Samsung's smart fridge, right?
What if I told you they already had a version?
There's no way. I know they have like the Amazon Alexa one, but
that's the version that they have on the Samsung smart fridge. It's the Amazon Alexa one.
Do they have it on mobile? I know there's like the one Elder Scrolls game, but I feel like Skyrim just needs to be ported onto my phone at this point. Like,
they could probably get it to run decently well on a phone at this point. If it runs on a Switch, which is basically just a charged up iPad, I'm sure they could get that to run on an iPhone, especially the newer ones.
Catch me driving to work playing Skyrim on my phone.
I would totally spend $60 to play Skyrim on my iPhone.
$60? Hell no. I'm talking like 10, because that it's going to run horribly anyways.
This is very true.
Maybe not, actually, because like new phones are kind of probably good enough.
If you want to play Skyrim or Fallout for the first time, and you have an Amazon subscription, which I assume you do if you're watching this show, unless you are pulling a little bit of that. Amazon Luna has the Fallout games and Skyrim on available for streaming without paying any extra money. It's just included in your subscription. So go check it out if you haven't. It's a lot of fun.
Man, remember when they were going to make a console?
The Amazon Luna console? Did they not make one?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it's all just like streaming through your Fire Stick, which maybe I'm thinking of something else. I think Google tried to make a console.
Yeah, no.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
I think I vaguely remember this whole console thing, but yeah, it's just kind of silly that they would even think about doing that when their whole gimmick is the game streaming. I have been replaying Vegas over the last couple of days on Amazon Luna because I am back in my hometown for a month and I had to leave my extremely large gaming computer behind. It was not feasible to bring that with me, so I tapped into the Luna framework and hooked up my Xbox controller. There's some input lag, so it's not the greatest experience, I have to admit, but it's still fun.
Yeah. I mean, whatever works, you know?
Yeah. All right. Up next, we get a little bit of info that Coop has been vault delving a lot in his quest to find his family. He says that he's been in a whole lot of vaults. That's interesting. Do you think we're going to get any flashbacks of him exploring vaults in the immediate aftermath of the bombs dropping or anything of that sort?
I would really like to, but I mean, I just don't know. I can't tell where they're going with the ghoul that much right now. Like, I would like to see that though, because that sounds cool to me. And like, maybe we could see like early wasteland, like raider tribes starting to form during that. Like, give me stuff like that and I'm happy.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. I do wonder how far they're going to go with the flashbacks if we are going to get those early days of post-war America, because I want to see what the world looks like immediately after it blows up, where the ghoul is out there. And I really hope that this season we get to a point in the flashbacks where Cooper somehow gets separated from his daughter because the bombs go off. He's still with his daughter. So we don't know what happens in between that point where he's on the horse running away from the bombs to the point where his family is somewhere else without him.
Right.
Yeah. And then the final little piece of information that we get, we see that Hank used the little back or the little neck chip that Mr. House invented in order to brainwash some poor fellow to deliver a message to Lucy. He says, it's got everything handled. She needs to go home, Sugar Bomb. and there's a box of sugar bombs on the table.
Yummy.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the pre-war flashbacks. We already got into it a little bit, but our pre-war story picks up pretty much right where we left off last season after Coop discovers that Barb and Vault-Tec want to drop the bombs themselves. Coop wants to take Janie and run as far away as possible, telling her, grab your three favorite outfits, grab your favorite toys, we gotta get going. He ends up meeting Lee Moldaver in a little diner, and Lee convinces him, stick around and spy on Vault-Tec using your acting skills. I know that your wife is a monster who wants to blow up the world, but please just...
Please spy on her.
Please spy on her. It starts off with the meeting that we got at the end of last season with the whole shady, we're going to blow up the world corporation cabal. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the guy standing up at the top watching over them is the real Mr. House now?
I think it could be, but it could just as easily be someone high ranking in Vault-Tec that maybe we just haven't, that's going to be like some big thing that he's still alive after everything. And like maybe there'll be something with that, but I'd be fine if it was the real Mr. House. I mean, that'd be good.
And I say the real Mr. House, like our theories are confirmed. We don't actually know yet if there's a real Mr. House and a fake one. They could be doing something completely different with us, but I'm going to go off that assumption for now.
Yeah.
We get another great needle drop here with Make the World Go Away by Eddie Arnold, which plays as Cooper and Janie are escaping Barb's clutches, and they get interrupted by a mass panic when a nuclear alarm test goes off.
Yes, and there was a very cool detail. Not like small, like you definitely noticed it. Obviously, there's the Vault-Tec salesman rushing around there, and it's very reminiscent to like the opening of Four.
Yeah, even the neighborhood was so close to the like little cookie cutter neighborhood with the cul-de-sac that they have in Fallout 4.
Yeah, and I'm sure that was intentional. I mean, they have put a lot of like care into this show in like making small references wherever they can.
You know, it feels like they could have made an announcement over the alarm speakers telling people this is just a drill.
Yeah, because people genuinely started losing it.
They're kind of assholes for that, I can't lie.
Yeah, well, I think they said it on like the radio right before, but people were like absorbed in their own like conversations and whatever. So as soon as the alarms went off, they just started going into full on panic mode.
Exactly. Even Janie, who heard the thing because she's, you know, she's a kid, that's scary when the nuclear bomb sirens go off. She was pretty terrified. And then just seeing the poster up there of Cooper giving the thumbs up like everything is just fine as people are freaking the hell out about possible nuclear annihilation. So perfect. You have that moment of realization on his face where he looks and he's like, damn, what did I get myself involved with? I'm the poster boy for genocidal maniacs.
Yeah. It's happened to all of us once, though. So, I can't judge.
Yeah. Do you think that with Cooper going to spy on his wife and house in Vegas in these next upcoming episodes, what do you think that relationship is going to look like between Cooper and House? Is House going to, like, see right through him? Or, I mean, it's going to be interesting for sure.
I think it's very possible that House sees right through it. I mean, from what we've seen, and like you obviously know more, but from what we've seen in the show, he seems pretty intelligent. And I'm assuming based on the games, or based on New Vegas at least, you kind of get a better idea of that.
Mm-hmm. House, not only is he really intelligent, he's a really ambitious guy. Which, I mean, obviously, but if you end up killing him in Fallout New Vegas, his obituary gets released, which he wrote himself, and it outlines his like 50 to 100 year plan for New Vegas, where he essentially, his plan was get really rich off of reopening the Vegas Strip, reopening the casinos.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was going to reignite the whole like industrial sector of America, which is just insane. And then his third step was put people back on the moon.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Cool. So He had a lot of big ideas. Who knows if that obituary was actually his plan or if he was just kind of releasing that after his potential death in order to hype himself up and make everyone think, oh, damn, we really lost out on one of the great minds.
Yeah. Yeah. Could be a little bit of both.
Yeah, because as intelligent as he is, it's really clear that he's a guy who loves to stroke his own ego.
Yeah, been a lot of that recently, honestly. We haven't even covered this show. We're not related to this at all, but reminds me of, like, Welcome to Derry. He could have won, but he had to skip and be a silly little guy.
Mm-hmm.
That motherfucker.
That was a great show. Go listen to Welcome to Derry. Or go watch Welcome to Derry and listen to the Lorehounds coverage.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on the pre-war section before we talk about the vaults a little bit?
I don't think I have anything else, although I would like to see a little, like, I'm sure we'll get more of it, but, like, more Moldaver towards the end of the season would be great.
Yeah. I'm a little bit sad that she died at the end of last season. I loved her character in the or in the post-war period, but I'm glad that she came back for the pre-war stuff. It was a nice surprise to see her, and I'm glad she'll be a part of the story in that going forward.
Yeah, I'm hoping we, like, see how she was able to make it to present day, because, like, obviously she wasn't being let into Vault Tech's shit, like one of their cryo facilities. Like, what could have happened there, you know?
It's also really interesting that she mentions House wanting her cold fusion technology as the final key to his plan. Like, I get that infinite energy, especially in the post-apocalypse, that's huge, but they already have, like, close enough to infinite energy with nuclear fusion that, like, there has to be more to the whole cold fusion thing that we don't know about yet.
Yeah, he's got to have, like, some actual crazy shit planned out that just couldn't happen without cold fusion.
Yeah. So that'll be interesting to see that going forward. One final thing about Cooper before we move on. I meant to mention this earlier, but we saw Cooper healing his neck with a cracked fusion core, which, straight out of the games, that ghouls can heal using radiation. They're, in fact, in the games, are a variation of ghouls called glowing ones, which, exactly what it sounds like, it's a ghoul that is completely green and glowing with radiation, and their special ability is that because they give off radiation, the other ghouls around them are able to heal, and so they're kind of acting as the ringleaders for certain packs of feral ghouls. We even find one throughout the whole series. We only find one non-feral glowing one, and he leads a cult which is set up very close to Novak. They're at the Repcon testing site, which is a space rocket testing site, and they are the focus of a quest called Come Fly With Me, in which you help the ghouls to get into a rocket and fly off to the moon. It doesn't really work out for them.
Okay.
You help them launch, and they almost immediately crash into the ground, and their whole cult dies. So RIP to Jason Bright and the Bright followers.
Jason Bright? Oh,
Jason
my.
Jason Bright.
John Glowing. Like, what the hell is that name?
There's also a really goofy character who's in that cult that's a human, but he believes that he's a ghoul.
Okay. Isn't there, like, proof in the mirror?
Well, he's kind of in denial, and at the end, basically the ghouls are using him because he's a scientist and he can get the rockets up and running again. And at the end, they're like, oh, you're not a ghoul, so you can't come to the promised land with us.
And honestly, good for him, I guess.
But he ends up in Novak. So if the cons rolled in, RIP to that guy as well.
Yep.
Richard, would you like to set us up with our little vault plot line? Or plot lines, rather.
Sure. So we see Stephanie settling into her new job as the overseer of Vault 32, and Betty is doing her best to shepherd the people of Vault 33. People of the Vault are doing their best to give their overseers a headache, especially Davy.
Davy.
But maybe it's for the best that the 31ers are running things. We really just don't know, I guess. I'm skeptical because, you know, they work for Vault Tech and they're buds. But, you know, you never know. And Norm is just trying to get through the week or however long it's been. He's run out of food, so he's in a pickle.
I would say so. I love the opening for the Vault section where we get Come Go With Me by the Dell Vikings playing as Reg strolls through Vault 33 with a lollipop in his mouth.
Yeah, he's an interesting character.
He's such a goofball. What did you think about his little incest support group?
Dude, we don't gotta talk about the incest support group. All right. You know, maybe that's something that's better left for just people to experience.
Ugh. Yeah. I think it's so funny that everyone left as soon as they found out that it was against and not for.
Yeah, like those two were just trying to do it right then and there. That was insane.
It was pretty crazy. I love the way that Betty is just giving people busy work, like running a club, so that they can just get out of her hair. Like, she has so many things to worry about. I mean, 33 is using makeshift water filters, and it's not going super well. Parts keep breaking. They don't have enough electricity to make it all work.
Yeah.
Things are going pretty poorly.
And now there's going to be even more people between the three vaults.
That's right. With Norm letting out all the 31ers. Oh, man. When we get Norm going from fighting through his thirst, his starvation, and having to listen to Bud Askins, Mr. Brain on a Room with himself.
I was going
to
say.
Constantly just droning on and on and on about how he needs to get into one of the pods or how he can turn into dust. He can just turn him into dust and he can be recycled.
Yeah, that was kind of wild. He was just rage baiting, though, I feel like.
Totally, totally. It was also really funny to see Norm when he finally has his moment of realization that he can just cause absolute chaos by letting everyone out. He goes up to Bud and kicks the syringe that Bud has been threatening him with clean off.
The dust syringe.
So interesting that that's the way that they would recycle Norm, is by turning him into dust and like using him as fertilizer for the crop fields.
Yeah, that's just insane. But I guess whatever works, you know, different strokes for different folks.
It's so true. And we get our final, or actually, second to last needle drop of the episode. It's All Over But the Crying by the Ink Spots.
Good song. Good song.
Like you said, the Ink Spots, probably the most iconic and associated with Fallout. I mean, they've been there since the Fallout 3 trailer. So the whole time that Bethesda has owned the franchise, they've been the musical poster boys of the Fallout universe, and rightfully so.
Yeah, and I think I hope they continue to be, because it's great.
How do you think that this whole 31ers getting released is going to affect things in the immediate term?
I low-key think Norm is going to have to like run for his life and maybe get exposed to the wasteland, because I don't know if they're going to let that slide.
Yeah, because they should theoretically be on Bud's side and on Vault Tech's side.
Yeah. But who knows? Maybe they'll... I think it'd be interesting if one or two of the people who was frozen decides to actually like grow a conscience. Whatever.
Yeah. And do you think it would be someone that we've met already that's part of Bud's? We don't have the full kind of roster of who's involved, but
I don't, you know, that's the thing. I just don't know.
Yeah. Finally, we should talk about Hank a little bit.
Yes. Let's talk about Mr. OG Paul Atreides.
OG Paul is ready. That's right. And there was a little reference that was apparently to one of his other movies when he's pouring the coffee. I don't remember. It's really escaping me at the moment. I apologize, folks. But it was a reference to one of his other films and one of his other characters when he is in the power armor suit and he's really like happy with the coffee. Not the power armor part of it specifically, but the coffee part.
Oh, the coffee? I didn't know if it was the song that was playing.
The song? This was my favorite needle drop of the episode. I mentioned this to Richard before we started our episode. Working for the Man by Roy Orbison. This was my first time hearing this song. It plays as Hank gets himself cleaned up and continues some of Vault-Tec's experiments. I added this immediately to my like retro playlist. I love this song.
I just can't stand by that as a favorite needle drop. I'm sorry. You know, I think it was a great one, but you know, I gotta go with the classic. Mr. Robbins. Yes.
Sometimes you gotta stick with the classics. I get it. Hank, he's got a lot of work to do. He has 462,311 unread messages or unlistened to messages in his voice box or in his voicemail box. That's a lot. That's a lot of action items to complete. I hope he doesn't have to sit there and listen to all of them.
I kind of hope he does. You know, I feel like he deserves that.
Just a little bit. He did blow up a capital city of a thriving republic with like 40,000 people in it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he also, like, didn't he kill his wife? Wasn't that confirmed?
Yeah, well, basically killed her. She was, technically Lucy gave the final blow, but that was a mercy kill at the end. When she was a ghoul and like a feral ghoul rotting
right,
away.
Right, okay. It has been a minute. I should have rewatched season one. Okay. Yes, I remember now.
It's been a minute for me as well. I rewatched season one over the summer when I had a little bit more time. So there's a few things that are fresher in my mind, but there are some things that I definitely could use a refresher on. Maybe in the off days when there's not a new episode coming out, I'll try and work my way through.
Yeah, I might just try and binge it this weekend.
That's not a bad idea. And finally, Hank McClane reporting for duty to someone that isn't Vault-Tec and someone that he wants to keep his activities hidden from Vault-Tec. Someone whose old stomping ground is Vegas.
Mr. Robbie Bobby House.
Mr. Robert House. It's gotta be. I mean, I will be shocked if it's anyone other than Mr. House. And that just really leads to the question of how deep does Mr. House's influence go?
That is true. I did have one other like group or person, I guess, that I wanted it to be. Unfortunately, because of the your old stomping grounds line, it cannot be like who or what I wanted it to be. And what I wanted it to be was like Russians or like communists, something like that. Lean into like the political aspect, but again, because of the Vegas, your old stomping grounds, it can't be. It's got to be Mr. House.
Yeah. No mention of the Enclave in this episode. I wonder if they are going to be a presence. They were barely a presence last season after Dogmeat escaped.
Yeah, it was really just like they were just kind of like an early plot device and never used again.
Yeah, which makes a little bit of sense. The Enclave, they've been thoroughly kicked in the ass a couple of times already. They had their entire base of operations on the West Coast, which was an oil rig off the coast of California. It got blown up. It got nuked in Fallout 2.
Oh, yeah. I remember we did our episode on that.
Yeah, so they're not doing well. And some of the survivors... So when you go through Fallout New Vegas, the Enclave isn't a faction in its own right. You meet some elderly survivors of the Enclave. And when I say elderly, I mean these are people in like their 70s and 80s. Like they are, they're definitely out of their prime, but they have made a quiet living in the wasteland, kind of living by themselves, keeping separate from each other. And there's a really cool quest that you can do where you can convince these old timers to regather at their bunker and fight for whatever side in the Battle of Hoover Dam that you want them to. And so if you manage to convince them that they should fight on your side, they will show up in their Enclave power armor in a vertibird helicopter and have one final like hurrah as the Enclave. And that's kind of their big moment, which is really cool. And the quest is really interesting. That's how you can get some interesting looking power armor. And it also has one of my favorite companions as a part of that quest line. His name is Arcade Ganon. He's not old. He was a child when the Enclave were destroyed.
And okay.
He is a follower of the Apocalypse, which sounds like a cult, but it's actually just kind of like a science/aid organization that aims to teach people in the wasteland a little bit about medicine and like water filtration. Essentially, their whole thing is kind of like a Red Cross situation where they want to help people get back on their feet and help communities grow.
The name makes me think that like they're the opposite of what they actually are.
Yeah.
Like I totally would expect them to be just insane people who are just kind of doing awful stuff, because that's just what the Fallout world has come to. But
One other notable member of the followers of the Apocalypse, or I should say former member, because he really hates science, is Caesar.
Oh.
The leader of Caesar's Legion. He was a follower of the Apocalypse, and actually when he began to create Caesar's Legion, he was sent by the followers of the Apocalypse to the Grand Canyon to document some of the languages of the tribes that were living there. Mm-hmm. And he ends up getting captured by one of the tribes. And he essentially takes over from the inside while he's a prisoner by teaching the different tribes brutal tactics of war and helping them conquer each other and like forcing them into submission.
Right, as you do.
He goes from being a linguist and like aid organization member from California to being a brutal warlord.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a Tuesday for me. I don't know about you.
Let's take a quick ad break before we get into our thoughts and how we felt about the episode and wrap things up.
All right.
Where is your power armor?
Get the fuck out of here. Grammarly ad now.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
And we're back. All right. Richard, why don't you tell the good people of the community, what did you think about this episode as a whole?
I think I said this a few times already, but like I thought this episode had a great feel to it. It really like captured the feel of playing the games, which the first season also did a phenomenal job of. But like, you know, I'm glad that they're keeping that rhythm of like very like there's a good driven plot that like you care about, but there's still like all sorts of weird and like quirky shit going on in the background, like the flea soup lady. And she doesn't even really care that her son's dead, but she cares about the fucking caps that he owes her. Like, that is peak Fallout.
It really sucks when someone dies before you can collect your debt from them.
Right? Like, I know he was my closest friend, and I know, like, I should totally care about that part of him dying or whatever, but, like, he owed me $5, man! I need my $5!
That's just... it's so messed up for her, man.
Yeah, I mean, and what a piece of shit. Like, dying before paying her back, horrible person.
What did she even raise him for all those years for?
Yeah, like, can't even give him... blah, blah, blah. Can't even give her caps back. Unbelievable.
You think Kyle MacLachlan took him?
Kyle Mac...
Hank McClane.
Hank McClane. Yeah, I can remember what the act. Okay. Yeah, Hank. Kyle. Paul.
Paul Muad'Dib Atreides.
Yeah, that guy can't aura farm as well as my glorious King Hadrian Marlowe.
I'll get to the Sun Eater books one of these days.
No, you won't. It's okay.
I will. I'll get to them after the Cosmere. I've been on my. I've been reading Rhythm of War.
You have? You've been reading Rhythm for a minute now.
The book is like 1,200 pages long. It's a miracle that I got through the other ones as quick as I did.
Dude, that's because Oathbringer's so peak. But yeah, I get it. Rhythm took me like 3 whole weeks. About a year ago, actually.
Damn. Well, I promise. I will have Rhythm of War done by the end of January.
Is that an oath?
That's an oath, and I'm going to bring it.
You are not bringing your oath.
Did you have any problems with this episode?
I did. I had one problem, and that is the absence of the Maximus plot. Like, come on, give me Maximus and give me Thaddeus with his weird neck mouth thing. I don't know what to call that, but like, come on, you can't have Fallout without the Brotherhood of Steel.
Yeah, definitely. It was notably absent, and I've seen some folks in the Discord talking about how they also felt that it was weird that they didn't have anything about the Brotherhood, and that, you know, the pacing maybe felt a little bit off for this episode because of that. Which I don't disagree with. I think it did feel a little bit off. I still loved the episode overall.
Yeah, like I said, that's my only like problem. I think everything else has been phenomenal. What do you got, friend?
I thought this episode was so funny. There were just so many times, whether it was the flea soup lady or any of the other moments in this episode, even Mr. House, when he gets punched in the mouth and he's like, well, I'm rarely wrong, but we'll move on. It just, everything was the peak of Fallout humor, where it was so dark and witty, and it just captured how messed up this world is and how everything has gone wrong.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Every line in this show feels like it's straight out of the games. It's not like some other series, which I won't name names, but I'm watching a show that has some video game tie-ins right now on Netflix, and it might be terrible. If you want a hint, they recast the lead this season.
The Witcher! The Witcher! Yeah, I would... I feel sorry for you.
Yeah. The only good part about the new season of The Witcher is that they brought in one of my favorite characters, Regis.
Yeah, and what'd they do to one of your other favorite characters, Aaron?
They killed him, like, 4 books and 3 video games early.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, spoiler alert for a show that you don't need to waste your time with, I guess. Anyways, I did feel like there were a couple of things missing and that the pacing was a little bit off, like folks in the Discord were saying. But overall, great first episode, even if it was mostly a setup episode. It did a really good job of setting things up. I really loved it.
I think next week we are in for a treat.
Absolutely. I'll just get into my like closing thoughts before we talk about a little bit of feedback. It really felt like a return to form. I feel like there was a little bit of a gap with the pacing, with that lack of a Maximus plotline. A lot of shows have been doing a 2-episode drop at the beginning, or as Richard suggested before we got on the microphone, kind of like a longer first episode. This show could have done that, and maybe it would have felt a little bit more complete, a little more whole. However, the great needle drops, the game references, all the hilarious moments made this a really memorable start to the season. If the season as a whole is as good as this first episode, I'll be pretty satisfied. I can't lie, I'll be pretty happy with that. I would give this episode like a solid 8.5 out of 10. Please don't blow up my head with a mind control device, Amazon. I promise I like the show.
Yeah, you don't got to worry about Amazon in this one, buddy.
I don't think Amazon is listening or cares.
That's where you're wrong. I actually just sent them your address. When we're done, just open the door.
Well, They have ghosted us on our screener questions before, so.
Yep, and it's all because of you.
It is. Sorry. We love you, Amazon. Please give us screeners.
We love you, Amazon. I love the ad breaks. Give me more ad breaks, please. I know you guys are struggling as a company.
Give me more 3.5-minute ad breaks every 20 minutes in an hour-long episode. Please.
I want 10-minute ad breaks every 5 minutes.
I swear this episode almost made me pay for ad-free Amazon.
I'm with you on that. it's getting to a point.
What did you think, Richard? What were your closing thoughts on this episode?
Aside from the ad breaks, I thought this episode was, phenomenal premiere. Great premiere, phenomenal, whatever. It just really hit the nail on the head with the whole, the whole feel of Fallout's world. And it was just like season one in that way. Like, the Wasteland feels alive. It feels dangerous. Like, there could be a threat lurking around every corner that they turn, you know? And I think the core of this feel is that Lucy is starting to adapt to the Wasteland a lot better. And it's like watching a first playthrough, but as a show, obviously. Like, it's, I'm talking like a full, clean new playthrough, like you've never played the games before, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she's just figuring it out. And I think that's great. Like, that really helps sell the vibes. I don't know. But all around, I'm going to have to agree with Aaron. Give this one a solid 8.5 because the Maximus plotline. Next episode, hopefully.
If they had Maximus, what would your score have been? Would it have been a perfect 10 or would it have been like...
Probably 9.5 because it would depend. You know, yeah. If Maximus was in it and it was the same runtime, then it would be like a 9, maybe a 9.5. But if it was like a longer runtime to just... Like, everything we got plus Maximus, you know, then it would be probably a perfect 10.
Let us get into a little bit of feedback. This is all feedback from the Discord, which is a great way of engaging with the community. Feel free to also do any of the other options that Richard mentioned earlier, like the voicemail. We would love to get a voicemail. That would be so fun. We'd love to get an email. Really, any way you want to get a hold of us, it just makes this whole thing a lot more fun. So we appreciate all of you who are writing in, and we appreciate all of you who are just listening along and watching the show with us. So thank you.
Yeah.
We'll start off with Pawson20. Watched the first episode of season 2 of Fallout, and it was quite good, and I enjoyed it. There are several storylines at play, with Central being Cooper and Lucy working together to find Hank. The flashbacks are interesting. I'm also very curious about what Hank is up to.
Yeah, and then we got Sub-Zero said, I think this was a table-setting episode. Many short scenes that establish the key players in their locations. I like the flashback content, but I think there was maybe a little too much back and forth. Would have been better with 1 to 2 longer flashbacks instead of half a dozen short ones. But he thought the humor was on point and watched with a friend who's a big fan of the games and was loving all the Easter eggs.
Yeah, I would agree with both of these pieces of feedback. I think, Pawson, I'm also really curious about what Hank is up to.
Yeah.
He's such a mystery to me, especially now that he is like working for someone else who is not Vault Tech, because this whole time I've thought he's just a Vault Tech fanatic, and now we get that information that maybe he's not as much of a Vault Tech fanatic as we thought. He's kind of in it for himself, because he does bring up that he wants a promotion, that he's been doing good work and he deserves it.
Yeah, what a mindset to be in, honestly. Oh yeah, I had a hand in the destruction of the world, but I'll get a promotion.
And Sub-Zero, I think that you are probably you are the Richard of that relationship with your friend who is like pointing out all the Easter eggs as you're watching together, because I would definitely be, I would be that guy who's just pointing at the screen. Like, oh my god, wait, let me pause for the next 10 minutes to talk about the Easter eggs.
Yeah, I do that. I feel like you and I both do that. Like, for you, you know, it depends on like what we're watching or reading or whatever, you know?
Yeah, like when we watched Welcome to Derry together, you had a lot of like awesome Stephen King lore that I had no idea about.
So, yeah, and I didn't even bring up the giant cyborg bear.
We'll talk about that.
I'm not kidding, though. That is a real thing in the Stephen King universe. That guy did so much coke back in the day.
You know, as a lot of writers did back in the day. They were cranking out content, and they were on a lot of substances while they were doing it.
He had to have been on, because, like, that book.
He was on some Maturin route.
He was not on Maturin route. Some of the shit in that book was pure evil.
And our final piece of feedback we got from Josh Liu, who said, I did think it was a little weird that we have the earlier scene where they assume Hank is going somewhere in New Vegas, and then they ask the old flea soup lady where he might have been headed, might have led them to the vault, so there's that. Still, I'm happy to have it back. The coffee love reference was a nice coffee love. Is that the name of the project maybe that he was in?
Maybe. I have no idea, but I'm gonna go with yes. Josh Liu seems to know ball.
Yeah, I will defer to Josh Liu on this one. I do know if it's a reference to something, so I'm gonna go with that. Maybe Josh Liu is just saying that him loving the coffee was a reference to whatever the project was. I'm not sure, but write in, let us know what that reference was, because this
we are
series
lost.
Is chock full of them. Yeah, but thank you to everyone who wrote in. And thank you to everyone participating in the conversation on Discord. Thank you guys for being so awesome. We love this community. We love all of you. And we're glad to have you with us on the new season of Fallout. Richard, any closing thoughts after that feedback?
You know, like Aaron said, we definitely appreciate it. More fun to talk about it with more people. But then also, like, I'm just happy to be back, you know, talking about, I mean, I guess not back for Fallout because I wasn't a part of the original, the first season, but like, yeah, it's good to be back, you know, doing our thing where we ramble in a somewhat radioactive fashion.
And I'm not sure if it'll be you joining me next week or if it's going to be Chase joining me. It depends on what his schedule is looking like and what he's up to.
Yeah,
but we will definitely be back, and I'll be back with you either next week or the week after. So
yeah, I mean, yeah. At the earliest I'll see you, or at the latest I'll see you for episode 3.
Absolutely. All right, so that is going to conclude our episode today. But before I let you all go, I want to give a quick shout out to all of the other podcasts in the network, because we are a part of the Lorehounds network and we are very proud to be a part of this awesome community. First of all, big thank you to the ones who make all of this possible, our parent podcast, The Lorehounds. They host us in their network. They host us in their Discord server. They're very kind and awesome podcasters, and we love them so much.
Wait, hold on. I have something huge to say. Yeah. As of recording, it is December 19th, and I just want to say happy National Emo Day as a member of the emo community, you know?
Happy National Emo Day to you, Richard. This is truly this is the land of your people. This is the holiday of your people.
It really is, dude. I'm going to go listen to My Chemical Romance for 14 hours after this.
Thank God. And if you are not celebrating National Emo Day, or even if you are, you should be tuning into Woolshift Dust, the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, Rings and Rituals, Properly Howard Movie Review, the Severance podcast, and Never Mind the Music. Links to all of these excellent podcasts and info on how to get a hold of us. That's all going to be in the show notes, so you don't have to worry about memorizing it. We're going to make it easy for you. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back next week. Do not forget your big irons.
Assume the position.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.